Today's episode of the Ringer NBA Show is brought to you by Ladder. Do you need life insurance? Check out Ladder Life, the smart and easy way to secure life insurance online. With traditional insurers, you can spend weeks on paperwork, broker meetings, and lab scheduling. But with Ladder, you can get a quote, apply, and receive an instant decision in 10 minutes or less. Coverage can begin immediately for those who qualify. Get a free quote and learn more at ladderlife.com/NBA. Today's episode of the Ringer NBA Show is also brought to you by Google Assistant. With the Google Assistant, you can complete over a million actions on your phone, in your car, and around the house. Do you ever forget where you parked at a game? I know I do. You're walking around the stadium after the game, and you can't for the life of you remember where your car is. Well, with Google Assistant, check this out. You can remember. Hey, Google, remember I parked in lot B, row 5.
Okay, I'll remember you parked in lot B, row 5. I'll also save a map of your current location.
Download the Google Assistant.
Basketball is very good. The Raptors are the best team in the East. Phil Jackson actually saved the Knicks. Markel Fultz will be an all-star next year. Basketball is very good.
Hello, and welcome to the Ringer NBA Show. This is Group Chat, aka Clubhouse of the Blog Boys.
And girl.
Yeah, but like you're an honorary blog boy in Kevin Durant's mind.
I'll take it.
Okay. Justin Verrier.
Hello, friends.
Haley O'Shaughnessy.
Hall of Fame.
First ballot inducted into the Blog Boy Hall of Fame, Haley O'Shaughnessy. Did you guys listen to Kevin on Bill Simmons' podcast?
I did, yeah.
What'd you think about that?
Great content.
It was incredible content. Incredible branded content for Taco Bell. I thought that it's just so interesting when you get to listen to players talk about how they view the game differently, you know?
Or the internet.
Or the internet, for that matter.
I thought that was more interesting when he was talking about how he viewed people talking about the game who are not players.
Yeah, and that the idea, I mean, like, here's the thing that's sort of the truth is that nobody has the time to watch as many games. None of us blog boys and girls have as much time to write about all the games that we actually have to process. So a lot of it is taking in sections of games and analyzing, like, oh, did this person have a good game? I will go watch their highlights.
Perhaps even looking at the advanced analytics.
Perhaps it happens, but apparently we shouldn't be. We should be looking at rebounds and using the eye test.
Rebounds, field goal percentage.
Eye test.
And the opponent field goal percentage.
I thought it's a really cool podcast. Part two should be going up shortly. You know, we always appreciate the support from Kevin Durant on the blog side.
He's a big fan of the group chat podcast.
I hope so. I'm not a big fan of major players for the Philadelphia 76ers suffering from facial contusions.
So it's been a bad couple of years for you.
Well, it does not escape me that the injury was caused by Markel Fultz's shoulder.
Yes, that's some irony right there.
Yes.
It's not keeping Markel out of the game.
No, he's an Iron Man.
But now it's keeping Joel out of the game.
Yeah,
that shoulder is like better than anything now. It's like almost like a bionic shoulder. It's just so tough.
Maybe that is how he came back, is that they pumped in like some literal iron, like Wolverine or something.
I want to be like a more present human being and connect more with people, like in real.
You should meditate.
It's not even about meditating, Haley. It's like I just want to have like conversations with people where I'm not also like kind of checking my phone.
We say with our laptops in front of us.
Yeah, this is just the rundown. But yesterday, I had like this full, lovely afternoon of human interaction.
Wow.
Yeah, you were part of it.
I love it.
And then I got back to my office and everybody's looking ashen and like, did you see? Did you see what happened? It's like, can I ever get off my phone? It's like, without Markel Fultz caving in Joel Embiid's face or whatever happened. Now, I will say this, and I will regret it. I think he's going to be okay. I hope that his not good Instagram that he put up was like a wink and a nod. Frankly, I hope he can still wink and nod. Let's just put it that way.
But it only showed half of his face.
Yeah, but that might be more of like an Instagram framing
trendy
thing.
Yeah. You see that a lot.
Did you rewatch in that particular game when the incident occurred?
Yes.
How was it? I refused to watch the video.
You haven't watched the video
no.
yet? Oh, they were just scrambling for the ball and it just happened. At first I thought, okay, he just got knocked in the face. Like maybe he's like a broken nose or something. Mm-hmm. Which, speaking of Hall of Fame, Steve Nash.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Steve Nash moment.
Is the broken nose.
Yeah, the broken nose. Just popping it back into place.
Haley's bloodlust is really on display
yeah,
right
seriously.
Now.
Seriously. You're talking about Wolverine resetting noses.
But at first I thought it wasn't that bad, but then you can kind of tell in his reaction right away.
Yeah, and also the found footage horror film, which is Joel Embiid going through that elevator door and then collapsing in the hallway as the doors close.
Right.
Did you see that?
From
the Sixers locker room hallway? Not cool.
Why do they have cameras there?
I don't know. I think it's like for like in 2022 when we've won our third straight title, they'll probably really like be enjoying the camera footage of the hallway.
Sure.
But until then,
I do like the glimpses of like the back areas of arena sometimes. Like whenever the Heat guys would go back in there, there was always like these like extravagant displays of like past moments. I'm always on a like, I'm really into House Hunters, I guess. And so I want to see the equivalent of NBA arena House Hunters.
Yeah. I wonder who would be, who do you think would be like a, you've been to a lot of arenas. What would be like a really good one?
The Warriors one would be interesting.
Okay.
It's actually smaller. Well, they're going to move to the new one soon, which, and it's probably why, because this one's too small, but it's like really congested and there's similar things up on the walls that you can kind of get distracted by. What else would be good? Thunder, just to see what happens with Russell Westbrook when he like goes into his labyrinth.
Yeah, right.
So
Sixers still beat the Knicks. Sixers, I think, are 19-1 at home since January. So
pretty good.
Trending upwards and seem to be able to handle road bumps like this. Dario has been playing out of his mind. Another fantastic post-game interview with Dario Saric last night where he was just like, talked for like 5 minutes and they were like, well, who do you, Brett Brown said, you guys aren't scared of anybody in the Eastern Conference. Is that true? And he's like, no, I'm scared of LeBron. He was like, I don't want to play LeBron James, but other than that, we could beat anybody. I thought it was very funny. And what did you think of seeing Fultz game two? I mean, not a lot of shots taken. I think he only had 4 points.
Probably for the best.
But had like 7 assists in
one
minute time.
Yeah, and he made a free throw, which is great.
Here's
made
to him.
One of two. Yeah,
raise your coffee.
I think that his court vision is already very obvious, which is good because it's something that he doesn't necessarily need to be 100% his shooting mechanics to show. It's kind of funny that now that I'm saying this, it reminds me a lot of like Lonzo Ball. Like when we were all like, yeah, but like you can tell like his passing intelligence is so high.
Yeah.
The shot will come. But I mean, it was only game two, but he's already throwing some like really special dimes. So that's good to see. Obviously, running into your teammates isn't ideal, but everything else, I'm like, okay, this is good. This is like better than what I was expecting.
Yeah. I thought he looked like God on his first game. Like I was so enamored with, I just love his game.
Yeah. But at the end, like he was like shooting and it was, what did he hit? Like 2 jumpers in a row?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. It was amazing. I mean, I'm so excited to see him play. I am a little concerned again with the swap with Simmons or Fultz. They were not on the floor together, I don't think, very much. Especially
but
the first game.
Simmons played a little. He had to play to make up for Embiid a little bit.
Oh, okay. So when they were playing together last night, did you notice whether or not, did Markel try any field goals last night when Simmons was on the floor?
I actually don't remember that.
He took 5 total. Yeah. He made one of them.
Yeah, so probably not.
I'm gonna just guess no.
Okay, but I still think he can be the next James Harden. That sounds like a pretty good ceiling.
Transition.
It's reasonable.
Yeah.
What happens if Markel does progress to a point where it's pretty obvious that he should be in the game?
Like in the playoffs?
So Bill yesterday was like, there's no way they play him in the playoffs. Like you can't do that to him. But I would say this. I think that whatever was wrong with him, and we can just make that the blanket statement, I think it was specifically related to his shot because nothing about the rest of it, like he got a shot blocked a bunch of times in his first game, bounced back from it. Fine with physical contact, was going into the lane, didn't seem freaked out by anything. Like it's not like, oh, he has to get used to playing basketball again. It's literally tied up in his shot. And it happens to be hilariously not very complimentary to Simmons because you just have these two guys taking up two backcourt positions who can't shoot.
I think that's my question for you. That's what I was asking is like, what happens if Markel, they see a lot of like potential and they want to put him on the court to start. How does that work?
I really don't know. I wish I had a cool answer. I guess I'm not the blog boy I thought I was because I really don't know how you play. I guess you could go Simmons, Markel, and some shooters and just have a lot of driving and kicking. Like you play Bellinelli, Redick, Simmons, Markel, and
Embiid, if he can shoot.
But Embiid likes to stand on the perimeter too, so you basically have two guys who can drive. I mean, I think Markel has like a really nice slash, and I think he has a really nice tempo change when he's got the ball in his hands. But I don't know what you do about the lack of shooting from those two positions specifically.
Yeah, the way that they started him off as the backup point guard, basically new TJ, I think was telling that they like recognize that athletically he can hang, and he showed that from like
big.
From the first second he was on the court, I was like, this guy like belongs.
Yeah.
He's like a high caliber elite athlete. On the other hand, like I think you're going to have to cover for him at least until he shows that he can even hit like a mid-range jumper with consistency.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think so they're currently in fourth. They're like a little bit behind the Cavs. So I actually said this the other day, but you know, in terms of like the trajectory of the Sixers as a franchise, I obviously am just going to be like blindly cheering for them as a Philadelphia fan, but I almost think it would be better for them to lose to someone like Cleveland or Boston or Toronto in the first round than it would be to lose to Indiana in the first round. Just because in terms of like the narrative where it would be like, yeah, you know, like this was our first time. Maybe we win a couple of games against Cleveland or we win a couple of games against Boston or Toronto. I mean, they're not going to get Toronto because the Bucks are like, they just own the eighth seed right now. Yeah. But they get to the point where it's like, we took a couple of games off them and it's a good learning experience. Whereas like a 6 or 7 game series that they lose with Indiana, which is entirely possible, would be a little bit disappointing.
Someone who they're more evenly matched with. Who
has, yeah, and I think it's just like their Sixers have been such like a popular story this year and the Pacers have been largely under the radar. And it would be kind of a reality check if it was like, in fact, Sabonis, Oladipo, Turner, and Corey Joseph are like the real process, you know?
Yeah. Well, didn't Durant say that on the podcast too? He's like, yeah, the Sixer team is going to like figure some stuff out in the playoffs. It is interesting because that's kind of the central question we've been talking about with them mm-hmm. this whole season. It's like they are good enough to make the playoffs, but should they push now or is it better for them to get playoff reps for Markelle Fultz in the playoffs?
Well, but the Markelle thing is a different situation now that he's come up. But before he was back and before we knew he was going to be back, I was always of the opinion that this playoffs doesn't really matter.
Sure.
If you look at that, like it's just like, just be happy about the future. Like this playoffs does not
but they
really
quietly
matter.
Went out and got themselves a bench with Bellinelli and Ilyasova. Even
they
though
did.
I'm not over the moon about those acquisitions, but Bellinelli has been good.
Yeah, and, you should be about Bellinelli.
Well, that's not a let's see what TLC can do in that's this true. Series. You know what I mean? That's not like let's run Justin Anderson out there and see if we should keep him. It's fine. And I think that actually, you know, those guys are very much responsible for this team's like cruising into the playoffs.
Yeah, they could hang. And yeah. Look at the East right now. I don't know if it's ever going to be this soft going forward. Like Gordon Hayward will be back next year. Kyrie Irving won't be dealing with his knee injury. LeBron maybe has like a teammate that can hang with him.
Right. Toronto, you have to assume, has a couple more years of their prime window with Lowry and DeRozan for
right,
sure.
Right.
The Bucks like, can't be this bad next year. Or maybe they right. can. But, you know, I will say though, I hope that other teams are saying, I think that other teams are saying that about Philly. I think other teams are probably saying like, oh man, like, Philly's just going to get better. We have to take advantage of this year. You know, if I was Toronto, I would hope I go to the finals this year because I think the East is going to be that much tougher next year.
Yeah, I mean, unless his teammates are concussing him, like Embiid is going to be a monster. Like, yeah. Who guards him? I still don't know.
No, even Durant said that. He was just like, that guy, nobody can guard him. You can't switch onto Embiid.
Right.
Let's talk, you mentioned briefly Steve Nash, and the Hall of Fame inductees were named today. It was Mo Cheeks, Steve Nash, Jason Kidd, and Grant Hill. I just thought, like, if you guys had any thoughts on any of these guys, you know, we could go through, I think, I don't have like the statistical case for each of these guys, but one thing I thought that was really interesting about Nash, Kidd, and Hill specifically was how much they are like players who we play in today. They were like kind of this page-turning generation of players that introduced a sort of lack of positionality that changed the way we understood the positions that they played, whether it was Kidd, who for the large part of the majority, like the beginning part of his career, was just like this defense and assists machine, but didn't really score very much. Or Nash, who many people thought like was a borderline NBA player or was basically like, you know, pretty good, but like a lot of people doubted for a lot of his career and wound up being a really revolutionary point guard in a lot of ways and paved the way for guys like Steph Curry. Or Grant Hill, who was like one of the sort of sad stories where it's like, you know, his knees didn't allow him to have the career that I think he probably could have had, but really introduced this idea, not necessarily of stretch four, but of inside out play, of a wing that could do all these different things and wasn't just limited to being like, I'm Chuck Person, I stand over here, play a little bit of defense, you know, and you have to sum me on and off. Like, I mean, do you have any memories of these guys you wanted to talk about?
I mean, for me, and I think for a lot of people of like my age range, I think Nash is just kind of the guy.
Yeah.
I just think that like the 7 seconds or less team was just so different and revolutionary, as you mentioned, but also just like, I don't know, it seemed to turn the page in a more fan-friendly like style of playing, mm-hmm. but also just like what could happen on a court. Like you said, like Nash was like the underdog guy that everyone counted out, and all of a sudden he becomes a two-time MVP. And then you have guys who are just like outcasts, kind of tweeners, and they kind of flip that on its head.
Yeah.
And they made that just an advantage. And it's just like, it's really changed the game for like what we have now.
Yeah, the age of the unicorns now. And it's like these guys in their own way were unicorns.
Yeah.
Nash was the same for me, and I think that it's cool because I see a lot of what he did and how he like would run an offense in point guards today.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like super fast, but also like creative and like make it up as you go, and I think that's like the most fun point guard for me to watch.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about some other games from last night, spin them forward towards the rest of the season here. Last night's Celtics game, it's their fifth win in a row. They beat Utah. I think this was basically the Haley Bowl. There was no getting out of this podcast for her today.
Well, but the
so
the
many
Clippers,
of your large adult
the Clippers,
sons were playing.
It wasn't a three-way with the Clippers.
Yeah, and, right, with Harrell, you mean? Yeah. But
if the Clippers were playing the Wolves, so Montrez versus Gorgie, then yes.
Yeah, that's right. But Donovan versus Terry is a pretty big clash.
Yeah,
and these guys were very
instrumental.
They were very instrumental in this game last night. Utah, for as much as they've been red hot, still can't really afford to drop these games, especially at home against a Boston team without Kyrie. Man, Jaylen Brown was awesome last night.
He was so good. That last shot was incredible.
Yeah, and like these injuries that the Celtics have been having, like, yeah, they've been bad, but it's the same thing with what we're talking about with the Celtics. It's like maybe not for this season, it's a good sign, but like you're getting reps for Jaylen Brown. He's taking the last shot at the end of the game, and he wouldn't get that if Kyrie was on the floor.
The distribution of points, the distribution of minutes, the getting 13 out of Aaron Baines. This is also without Horford, of course. And this whole thing where I heard Russillo and Bill talking a little bit about this, I think. But this idea that pretty much any person who's filling that Isaiah Kyrie role at any given moment, their numbers just pop. Like even Shane Larkin scoring 10 points in 34 minutes at a plus 25 plus minus last night. I don't know. I mean, like, how does Brad get these kinds of performance out of these guys? What is the basement for, like, what Brad Stevens could do with a player?
I think that what Bill was saying on that podcast was that that was a result of them running so much and so heavily through the point.
Yeah.
But I also think that you have to give guys credit. Brad is kind of like that college coach who would give, like a three-star an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that's what he does with his bench. And so he can pick out these guys. It's funny that we were just talking about Nash. And, you know, I very intimately know Terry Rozier's game, but he is exactly that kind of player. He's like a very small guard, but he has all the indicators that he could be a good reserve in the NBA.
Yeah.
He'll like run up and grab more rebounds than your backup center. So I think that's how he does it, is that he finds the guys who maybe other people aren't looking at.
I've been thinking about this a lot because of Kentucky Basketball Week. Kentucky Basketball Station. We did a couple of pieces. Paolo specifically did a piece about the guys who went to Kentucky and now have been sort of on the fringes of the NBA. And I can't remember what the exact cliche is, but there's this idea basically that after the eighth guy on a team, the margins of between talent of the ninth guy and the 12th guy, and then even the 17th guy, whoever that would be, are like micro. Like
right.
There's not a huge amount of difference between Archie Goodwin and a guy who's in an NBA rotation right now, talent-wise, or like physical skill set-wise. But there are these like series of things like context, you know, chances, taking advantage of opportunities, and being in the right place at the right time.
That makes you think about Donovan, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's a super small guard too. Mm-hmm.
A lot of the players in last night's games are like that case, Ingles. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, I don't even know, like Royce O'Neal getting like 18 minutes against the Celtics in a March game. Royce O'Neal, like I wouldn't have picked him out of a milk carton.
Right, but also really impressing on defense.
Yes, and that was the thing is like this was a 97-94 game. We saw two of the best defenses in the league last night.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to turn to. It's just like we talk a lot about the star players and we talked about this a lot with Kyrie and like where he stood in the MVP race and all that. And we'd always bring up the defense, the context, the environment with which he plays in. And you kind of see it shine in these sort of moments. Like, yeah, the system is set up to perhaps showcase a point guard, but like their defense is really good. And like they didn't have Al Horford, who's been kind of the anchor there, but they have a lot of these switchy wing types, which in today's NBA, if you have those positions filled out, it seems like you just have a certain advantage. And you look at on the other side of the game, just the Royce O'Neal types, like those guys are hard to find, and yet these teams have managed to not only get them in the draft where you'd expect them to go, but also manufacturing them out of nothing. And like Royce O'Neal's the type of guy, like even Jay Crowder is looking semi-competent, you know? And on the Cavs team, it just didn't look like that.
Well, so the Bucks are like a really good example of the bad side of that, right? That they are trying to manufacture their own talent out of like a system that's sort of just like, I think was based more like on physiology than maybe fit. Where they're like, oh yeah, let's get all these long guys and switch everything and then hope that everything else comes from that. Now they've also made some unique personnel decisions, I would say. I mean, they've suffered without Brogdon a little bit, but you know, they're running out there with like Jason Terry leading a crunch time offense because they need anyone who can shoot the ball past 20 feet. And they're busy and they do a lot of stuff, but like, there ultimately it comes down to Giannis getting to the hoop is their entire offense. And you have to wonder whether or not they are a team that could use a little bit more delineation between who does what on their team. I think Jabari also is like a, whatever the opposite of an X factor is. He's sort of, when he's on the floor, you can kind of feel him pressing a little bit to show that he can still play. And it doesn't really work for the team so much. But I just thought it was really interesting because you're talking about franchises that can seemingly like manufacture their own luck by finding these players, whether it's Boston, whether it's Utah. And Milwaukee has a bunch of interesting pieces, but especially this year and post-Kidd, they've sort of started to take a nosedive. And if it wasn't for how bad the Pistons were, they would be in danger of being out of the playoffs.
Well, I think that's why last night's Jazz-Celtics game was so much fun, because it was the Haley Bowl, but it was also the Blog Boys Bowl, in the sense that it's these two coaches that we just are obsessed with,
yeah,
because this is exactly what they do. So they can take a game that starts Terry Rozier and gets a bunch of minutes from Yabu, and we still are like really into it. It's still really fun.
There's usually a drop off when Spurs guys leave San Antonio, mm-hmm, and Boston's like the only safety that I've found, like with Aaron Baines like playing well. I mean, Boston is starting to have those kinds of San Antonio-esque successes with some of these guys. Like Daniel Theis, like, who is this dude? I know he's not going to play this year again, but like finding people off the scrap heap and just manufacturing NBA careers out of that.
Yeah, I think the one thing in common that Jazz, Celtics, and Spurs maybe even have is that they never make moves because they have to.
Yes.
I feel like that's the issue with the Bucks. They almost like decided collectively that this was their year. Like Giannis popped as an MVP candidate early on, and they just decided this is when we're going to go for it, which seemed to be a little bit early. And as a result, you've seen them like make moves after the Eric Bledsoe trade where they almost feel like they have to double down on that whole idea. Whereas like the Jazz can sit back and trade a guy like Rodney Hood, who's like the Cavs would love to have, and pick up Jay Crowder just to think one more year in the future and to look at the bigger picture in a better way.
You know, and the difference between San Antonio and Boston, for instance, like, or even maybe even Utah, who've shown themselves to be like very willing to wheel and deal, is that San Antonio tends to get these guys and then more often than not run down their contracts and, you know, hope to re-sign them on like a team-friendly deal or somewhat team-friendly deal, but like Jonathan Simmons and these guys who leave the team, they could have some success, but they're never back at the Western Conference semifinals or finals like they are with San Antonio. Boston.
Well, so they're not having that kind of success. But when you leave San Antonio, you're definitely having more monetary success.
You get
success.
Paid, for sure. Yeah. And I don't want it to be construed that I was like, you know, you don't love the game if you want to go get paid and play in Orlando. Like, go get that money. But I was more saying that a guy like Danny, and to a lesser extent, Dennis Lindsay, and it's Dennis Lindsay, right, in mm-hmm. Utah, they can take advantage of those guys that are like, oh, all of a sudden Terry Rozier is like a legitimate starting NBA point guard. I can trade him. You know what I mean? Like they can basically develop assets internally and have pieces to go get the next big player that they think can put them over the top. Because if you think that the drop off from Terry Rozier to Shane Larkin isn't that bad, then Rozier is an asset, you know? That's definitely how Danny Ainge thinks about it.
Yeah, I forgot who said this. It might have been a Ben Falk or Kevin Pelton type, but like the NBA is essentially just like getting guys who are better than their contract says they are. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of it just comes down to like math and that sort of thing. And you look at what they do, like getting rid of a guy like Jonathan Simmons, yeah, like it's great that he's having success in Orlando. It's great that he got paid. But like from a franchise building mode, like those are the contracts you usually get in trouble for, especially when the cap is going to be more complicated in the next couple of years. Like you don't want to be stuck paying a double digit $1 million like salaries to him.
You don't want to be the Wizards.
Yeah, they are. But sure, that's the trap everyone else falls into because they are desperate. And with the Bucks, it's kind of funny because you said they don't sit back and they made too many moves. And that's absolutely true. But now it almost seems like they have to do that again because they've gotten themselves in such a pickle.
Jabari needs a new contract.
It's not about Blog Boys. It's about Spreadsheet Boys. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about this rookie class we've been watching this season. Today's episode of the Ringer NBA Show is brought to you by Hotel Tonight. Fun fact, unlike flights or other travel, hotel rates actually get cheaper at the last minute. In fact, Hotel Tonight partners with awesome hotels to help them sell their unsold rooms, which means you get amazing deals. All it takes is 10 seconds, just 3 taps and a swipe to book a room. No long, endless lists of a zillion hotel choices. Hotel Tonight only shows you the best deals at the best hotels. Perfect for if you're busy or don't want to overthink things. Plus, you can book up to 100 days in advance in top destinations and up to a week in advance everywhere else. Book next week tonight. Book next month tonight. It's great for last-minute getaways or a quick staycation, whether you're a planner or like to leave things to the very last minute. And with Hotel Tonight's HT Perks program, the more you book, the better the deals get. So start scoring amazing deals at incredible hotels and download the Hotel Tonight app now. Today's episode of the Ringer NBA show is brought to you by Coca-Cola and Powerade. If you're into sports, then it is your favorite time of year. It's NCAA March Madness. The Final Four is this weekend. With so many games, you never know what's going to happen. That's why you need to be ready for whatever the next round brings and make sure your fridge isn't empty by halftime. Swing by Walmart for every round and stock up on Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade before the next game tips off. Coca-Cola is the official fan refreshment of the NCAA. I know Haley loves to have a fully stocked Powerade fridge whenever she watches her Louisville Cardinals. Oh,
cold.
Cold. Just like Powerade is when it's in your fridge. Be ready to watch all the games by picking up Coca-Cola and Powerade all tourney long. NCAA March Madness isn't just one game. It's a whole tournament. Make sure you're ready. Refresh every round by heading to Walmart to pick up Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade. Okay, guys, we're back. I want to talk quickly just because Fultz came back. Just because...
Oh, did he?
Jason Tatum had an incredible jam last night. Just because we've been watching this really awesome rookie class grow this year. And there have been some people that I thought were going to really pop off that did not. Holler at Malik Monk. There have been some people who have sort of started to develop their own cult following, like Frankie Smokes, but maybe have not like risen to the level that we thought that they might get at. Although he is ultimately a 19-year-old. Let's do this collectively. I don't want to do like each of us have to do it, but let's redraft the top five. And I want to cast forward a little bit. So this is as much about emotional confidence in someone as it is like empirical data that you have to show that they
belong.
From
this season.
Yeah. Like if somebody has shown flashes, shown the potential. I'm going to start with you, Haley. Who's the number one pick?
Okay, but you say we're doing this collectively.
I'm asking you.
And then you put me in the spot.
You kick off the conversation.
We have your back.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you guys know what I'm going to say.
Lauri Markkanen.
I actually have him third.
Okay.
So it's between Donovan and Tatum.
Okay.
Yeah, can we say that that's the debate? Jesus Christ, Chris.
How do you know I'm not going to pick Bam Adebayo?
I just have a feeling.
I'm not going to. It's okay.
Okay.
Donovan and Tatum. Yes.
Yeah. So that's they're 1-2.
Yes.
I have rookie of the year contender Donovan Mitchell number one.
Mm. Okay.
And I think that the argument for Tatum is casting forward, right?
Yeah.
I would 100%. Actually argue the reverse.
Would you argue the reverse?
I would argue that Tatum feels to me more like the third best player on a team. And that Donovan Mitchell, we'll see how far you can go with a guard as your best player in the NBA in the next 10 years. But Donovan Mitchell is like ready to rock right now.
How much of that is just like what we have seen and known? Like, I think why a lot of the current NBA stars have embraced Mitchell and KD like referenced that and to Bill was just like, he's doing it. He did what we did. He's running a team. And like, it's great to see that. But also like Tatum is thriving around like All-Star and a bunch of other stars and he's getting his and he's putting up numbers and contributing to winning. So I don't know.
And I think in the redraft, I think people who would put Tatum number one are basically saying that they see all this potential for him in the future.
Play 1-4, switch 1-4, inside-outside game. I would counter that with Donovan Mitchell looks like early Dwayne Wade crossed with a Wolverine. And
a literal Wolverine or the comic book character?
A literal Wolverine. I think that's pretty scary too. And I just think he's just like a very special talent. And like if you were going to take number one and you wanted to like, I mean, that Utah team was very beta. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's not a lot of fire in that. He brings a different energy to that Utah team. And you can tell he's just such a competitor.
I also think it's very impressive that he was not a very good shooter at the beginning of the year and something that was in the you know, all the draft guides, including the Ringers, was that he has potential to be a good shooter, but it's a toss up. And then he is a good shooter now. And the only other counterpoint to put Tatum number one is that I think that although Donovan is an exceptional defender and has always been, his size does limit him. And that was very obvious last night against Jaylen.
Yeah.
There were a couple times where Jaylen got the best of him just because Donovan does not have the wingspan to guard someone like that who's really crafty.
So if the 13th pick is number one and the third pick is number two, who's number three?
I have Lowry.
He's pretty good. I still like Lonzo. I still believe in the bow.
In the bow?
That's what I call
it. It's a Zoe.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just trying something new out.
Okay. Is it, he's just making up a new nickname for him?
Yeah. We're close. You know,
okay.
We go back.
So you think Lonzo 4. Casting forward.
I think you have Lonzo 3.
I might say him 3 over Markkanen.
Okay. Would you have Markkanen 4 then?
Probably.
I think Markkanen is a really, like, again, another really slick, it's like NBA ready, way better than I thought he was going to be. Still not a 1 or 2 option, which is what I want from a top 5 pick. But Lonzo is an interesting call there because what he does is he makes guys like Kuzma and, you know, whoever else he's paired with better.
LeBron,
you know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he'll be playing with LeBron. Whether or not LeBron's on the Lakers, I don't know. Okay, so you're going to go Lonzo 4.
I would go 3 with Lonzo and Markkanen 4.
Okay.
But it seems like what we're getting into is like current production, what these guys have shown already versus what maybe they can do a year or two later on.
Yeah. I think it's like, what do you want the value of your top 5 pick to be? What do you want out of that? You know, and I think that this class has a lot of guys who will be good contributors, but so far, I think Donovan and Jason are the two guys you think, you know, I personally don't think you could build an offense around Jason Tatum, but he's shown that like on certain nights he can carry the load. The 5th pick is interesting because that's the one where I'm curious. Like Bam is honestly like one of the biggest contributors of this class this year.
Mm-hmm. And Zach Collins, look what he's doing on a playoff team.
Hell, I mean, even like at the peak before he got hurt, Jordan Bell. You know?
Yeah. And then
I forgot about Jordan Bell when I was looking at the draft.
But there's a bunch of guys from this class who have kind of fallen. They're having a rookie season. Malik Monk, Jonathan Isaac, De'Aaron Fox, all having like a rookie season, figuring out how to play NBA basketball.
So would you guys consider Dennis Smith Jr. for the 5th?
It's really hard because one of the things that you see Jason and Donovan and these other guys do is they did make their teams pretty exponentially better. Right. And I, you know, you can't blame De'Aaron Fox or Dennis Smith Jr. for how bad their organizations are at this point, but you can note that they did not dramatically increase the wins, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Josh Jackson's another guy I really like. Like, he brings a toughness and he kind of sets a tone on the defensive end. And we knew he was going to struggle offensively and with his shot. And so he's really just living up to what we expected from him originally.
So let's put the 5th one on one of these guys. And you tell me who you think you have the most confidence in going forward.
I actually had DSJ.
You have DSJ 5.
Yeah, I think that he is having a rookie year, but I think that his emergence will be the highest.
So it's DSJ, Malik, Markel.
Bam.
Or De'Aaron. Bam's Bam. Like, they could trade Whiteside if they could find anybody to buy him. Like, I love watching Bam play on the Heat. He's
so
great.
Why wouldn't you give him the 5 spot?
Because I think for 5, you want somebody who could be like a team changer.
Oh, I see.
Or a huge contributor. Bam's going to be like a double-double guy, maybe at the best, you know?
I still like Josh Jackson. Okay. I mean, maybe that's just like me not getting rid of my initial evaluation and just like liking him in the tournament last year.
Yeah.
But I just think he has something that you can't find out there. And it's tough to find wings. We just said that.
Okay. I'm going to say Markel Fultz just because... Number 1 pick, you got to ride it out for more than a season. And I think he's shown, even in the early games, I'm like, this is real. This is a real player.
All right.
Anytime you can get 6 good games from someone, got to go with them.
I believe what I believe. We'll take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Today's episode of the Ringer NBA show is brought to you by Away. Away offers high quality luggage that is designed to be resilient, resourceful, and essential to the way you travel. Available in a variety of colors, I happen to love the green, and 4 sizes, including carry-on sizes that are compliant with all major US airlines. You know how important that is. The Away suitcase is a lightweight and made with premium German polycarbonate, and that's unrivaled in strength and impact resistance. Not to mention, it features a TSA approved combination lock, 4 360-degree spinner wheels, and a patent-pending compression system that helps overpackers like myself. Better yet, both sizes of carry-on are able to charge anything that's powered by a USB cord. A single charge will power your iPhone 5 times. I personally always have this problem where, like, when I get to the airport, I start checking out my phone, and then I realize I've kind of drained the battery for a while before I'm about to get on the flight, but not all the flights have power cords. I can charge my phone with my suitcase. It's amazing. It's one of the best things I've ever experienced about travel is being able to get that phone back up. Try it out Away for 100 days, vibe with it, travel with it, Instagram it, and if at any point you decide it's not for you, return it for a full refund. Shipping is free within the lower 48 states, and thanks to Away's lifetime warranty, if anything breaks, they will fix it, so you've got nothing to lose. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/ringerMBA and use promo code RingerMBA during checkout. That's awaytravel.com/ringerMBA, promo code RingerMBA for $20 off your Away suitcase. All right, guys, let's end this by talking about Karl-Anthony Towns. interesting week from last night. He dropped 56-15 against the Hawks. And I thought it was actually like a perfect microcosm of what Karl Anthony Towns does. I think with Kat as their best player, Minnesota's basically a 500 team. You know, you could argue that with a training camp and with like knowing that he was their best player, maybe they would build the team differently. But watching him last night against the worst team in the league by far, he was mesmerizing and amazing and did every single thing that you would want a modern basketball player to do. And yet you pointed this out last night on Slack, I think. The Hawks were still in the game.
The Hawks were in the game with 3 minutes left.
So talk to me about the state of Karl Anthony Towns after watching him for this season and watching him not, you know, at one point playing as a third option or a second option.
Always
and now
second.
being the focal point.
He was always the second option. I think that's just because of talent, but that could also be by default because Wiggins does not bring it every night, as I feel like we've said a million times. But his progression has been at first being quite like he was last season. You know, really flashy on offense, no defense. And then he transitioned into what hopefully was the Jimmy effect and did play defense. And then that tapered off a little bit. And now without Butler, he is completely taken on this number one role.
Yeah.
We never saw him like this last season, even when he was the first option. So it's been good to see. And it's also, it just feels like he's like more genuinely intense. I don't even know if that makes sense, but he's on a team that's winning now. And it's like, he wants to win and he's like in it to win. He's not in it. It's like,
so you're pretty into it.
Stat pad. Oh yeah. And I've been someone who's criticized Carl for the longest about it looks like he wants to make an all-star team instead of win a game. You know, like he seems like very much someone who's like, oh, I got my, you know, 70s double-double or whatever. But he genuinely looks like he is like someone who is counting on getting to the playoffs.
How much do you think that's like just Ben Simmons rubbing off on him?
Ben Simmons and him playing video games together. You don't think it has anything to do with it?
Well, do we have any proof that they played video games other than last night?
No.
That's a great conspiracy theory.
But they were definitely like pretty chummy when they were talking to each other.
Yeah.
Was that like an ad or were they just like hanging out one night?
Who can tell anymore? It's all an ad.
This is an ad.
I was looking at some of his game logs. It was very interesting to see how
many minutes he plays.
That and how Minnesota's wins corresponded to his field goal attempts. And how when he is just obviously like they're feeding the beast, it tended to mean that they were winning. And if it was like Carl disappeared tonight or Carl didn't get like much action tonight, nope.
And to his credit, even last season, he has been one of Minnesota's most reliable three-point shooters for quite some time, which is, it says a lot about their roster construction, but it also, I mean, last night he was like 6 for 8. And that's not the first time he's done that.
Yeah, like Bielitsa is basically playing the three right now.
Yeah. They had really nice combos last night.
Yeah, he stepped in well when he's had to, but you know, he's just very limited in what he can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got the jumbo package out there all the time now. It's a weird team to look out and see. And like they're playing 8 guys in a game against the Hawks in 41 minutes
for Towns.
It's tough.
They're 8.
I also wonder for all my criticism now, like in retrospect of both his and Wiggins' defense. Because we bring up all the time how many minutes they play. And it's like, I kind of always have given LeBron a pass. So it's like, well, he plays this many minutes. Like, how do you expect him to get back for every possession?
Yeah, right.
He's also like way older, a decade older. But I do wonder.
There's also not the expectation that Cleveland will be at all good at defense. Whereas like, I think because of Tibbs, we're just like, well, they should be holding teams to 81 points.
And I'm sure that it's really annoying to have this guy hot, like, you know, preaching that, but meanwhile, he won't give you a sufficient break.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wonder what's going to happen in the playoffs, especially with Jimmy Butler still not back. The range that they put out for him originally would have put him back around this time. It doesn't seem like his return is imminent. And so now I'm starting to wonder if he's not back for the playoffs, is just making the playoffs.
A couple guys who are like on that, like, when is this happening? Like John Wall's supposed to be back tonight, but was like, didn't participate in the shoot around, which was sort of supposed to be the first. I think Candace Buckner was tweeting, like, if John Wall is it shoot around, you could see him tonight. And he's just, but the first part didn't happen. And Jimmy still getting memed while sitting on the bench, but doesn't look like he's close to suiting up. I guess they could break in case of emergency if they felt like they had to win a game to get into the playoffs, but it was the first time we're going to see him against the Rockets in the playoffs?
Possibly. You know, they have the 6th easiest schedule of the entire league from here on out. So they might be just, you know, waiting for him. But also, that seems extremely not on brand for Tibbs to wait for anyone if they think that they're even, you know, possibly could go. So
they should beat Dallas.
Yeah, they should, but they almost lost to Atlanta last night. And before that, they lost to the Grizzlies.
Right. I mean, the nice thing is that most of these games are spaced out, but they have Dallas, Utah, Denver, the Lakers. Lakers probably won't have, definitely won't have Isaiah Thomas. They probably won't have Lonzo Ball by that time. Memphis, who don't seem to know that they're supposed to be trying to get the number one pick, and Denver again. And that Denver-Minnesota game, if Denver were to somehow go on a run here, could be for the eighth seed. But you're like you're saying with Minnesota, there's no easy wins.
Yeah, and I'm starting to look at some of the playoff matchups now, and you have Golden State versus Minnesota. Now, is that the type of thing, if you're Jimmy Butler, you rush back because you see Golden State without Steph Curry, maybe Draymond's not quite right, maybe KD's not quite right, and you're like, wow, we could take this. Or are you just like, you're not going to win this series, dog. Just stay home and like figure this out.
Jimmy Butler is so the former.
Yeah.
He's so intense.
I know.
But he has a contract coming up too. Like, it wouldn't be smart for him or the team that desperately needs him to take that next level. So
I think I agree with Haley. I know that he like sat out the All-Star game because it was, but like, obviously that was tied to the knee. You know, I think that Jimmy Butler wants to be in the playoffs. See, like he had that was really rough for him in Chicago.
And I think that you were saying this earlier, is it enough to get in the playoffs? Yeah, it's enough. It's absolutely enough. Maybe not enough for Tibbs, but enough for like the entire Minnesota fan base. Like, yeah. Being in the first round to a five-game series is still going to feel like a win.
Like an accomplishment, for sure. Yeah. All right, let's wrap it up there. That's it for the Ringer NBA Show group chat for Haley and Justin. This is Chris. Make sure you're listening to all the Ringer NBA shows. Draft class is on Friday. You got Heat Check on Mondays. Chris Vernon and Kevin O'Connor on Tuesdays. Sources say every other Wednesday. Until next time, talk to you soon.
Basketball is very good. Basketball is very good.